Where am I? Kim, the prison.
Whoa, now easy there, mister.
Roxon slowly opened his eyes again, squinting under the blinding light of the sun. An immense mountain of a man was standing over him with a big smile on his basketball-sized face. He had a black beard that started mid-cheek and grew halfway down his yard-wide chest. He was the largest man Rock had ever seen, making even Archer seem normal, and was covered with a crazy quilt of different colored furs and skins that had been insanely sewn into a pair of pants and a jacket. He looked like some sort of out-of-control hybrid animal that couldn't quite decide what species it belonged to.
You're lucky to be alive, fella. Here, drink this.
Thanks.
Easy there now, don't drink too much. You've been delirious for days. You gotta get used to being back with the living.
What the hell happened? How did I get here?
I heard the blast of them rusky bombs and waited till the mushrooms blowed away. Then I went out and loads of people was dead, fried to a crisp. But I found you, moaning and groaning beneath this here big rock that looked like it was thinking of setting on you for a long spell.
And who might I thank for saving my life?
Well, now, if you be asking my name, folks around here just call me Mountain Man Ed. Mount Ed, for short. I growed up in these here mountains my whole life. I guess I feel more mountain than man. And who might you be? I've been taking care of you like some sick pup or something. I didn't even know if you'd live or die.
Ted Roxon's the name my folks gave me.
Rock eased himself up a little on the bed so he could see the room he was in. He lay on a long cot that was nothing more than two long oak poles with animal hides stretched between them. The log cabin they were in couldn't have been more than 20 by 20 feet. But it looked as if the builder had stuffed every last thing he'd ever found or stumbled across inside. The place was chaos, with knives, pots, and pans, big blunderbuss rifles lying haphazardly against walls and around the floor. The walls, logs piled one atop another, had never really been fine finished, so a constant stream of air and sunlight filtered through a thousand small openings and cracks. By the front door sat three big hunting dogs, their fur black and sleek as a panther's, their tongues hanging far out of their wide-open mouths as they rested in the morning sun.
Roxon? The ultimate American? Oh, damn, even I heard of you. And I ain't heard of nothing back here in these woods. So I've been coddling the goddamn Roxon. Well, ain't that a kick in the pants? Oh, where's my manners? I'm gonna make you some food. You gotta get your strength back. You were smoking when I found you. Looked like you was a clang steak getting ready to sizzle. I dragged you back here and soaked you in these here herbs the Indians taught me about, and roots and stuff. You've been laying here for, let me see now, 6 days since I brought you here.
6 days? It felt like minutes.
Yeah, I had to force water and food down your damn throat. You didn't say nothing I could understand. Just kept saying, Kim.
Kim. I got...
Whoa, you'll be moving around soon enough. Just the fact you survived. Now that's amazing, I swear. But damn, friend, you just woke up but a few minutes ago. In a day or two, you can head out and search for this Kim.
It's more than that.
Rock looked up at the man who had saved him, and obviously spent a lot of time doing it. He told Mountain Man Ed the entire story of the convention. How the country had just been in the progress of being reformed, and a president had been elected. And then, Ed's face grew still as Rock told it all, his bearded jaw dropping open as if he were about to swallow a coconut.
You mean them damn Ruskies killed the President of the United States?
I hope to God not. But they sure as hell did in most of the delegates. He and his daughter were running to get over the peak behind the big log cabin. Vulture Peak, I think they call it. Were you there? Did you see any bodies? If they got to the other side, they might have made it. Did you?
I wasn't up that way. I just found you along my regular trail. I saw lots of bodies around that side of the mountain, though. Fried to a damn crisp, too. Like pieces of charcoal too long in the fire. They was hard, but they'd break apart if you touched them. Jesus. So the Ruskies did that. Killed our whole damn Congress and President and generals all at once. I'll tell you something, Mr. Roxon. I spent my whole life up here in these mountains, just like my daddy done, and his pa before him. And I don't like the Ruskies, but I ain't never had no run-ins with them neither. They ain't come up this way. Till now. But now they bothered me. They messed up my neighborhood, dropping their fool bombs on these here peaceful hunting grounds. I'm mad, Mr. Roxon. And when I'm mad, I'm mad. Tomorrow, Roxon, we go looking for your friends and for the present. And any damn res we find better hide, because I'm gonna start killing me some.
He walked to the far side of the cabin and began picking up rifle after huge rifle he had thrown around the big floor. Big blunderbusses, nearly 6 feet long, with muzzles that could have shot small cannonballs. He began cleaning them and loading them up, pouring round after round of lead in a small smelting pan he had rigged up above a hearth and bellows. He pumped the bellows hard, and the fire instantly roared to life, filling the cabin with heat and smoke.
I think I'm gonna make me a whole load of lead. We got some hunting to do.
We're almost there. Come on, Kim.
Kim and President Langford shot up the slope and had just reached the peak of the mountain when they turned and saw the falling steel balls dangling beneath the two parachutes. They got to the summit and ran the 15 yards across.
Run!
They reached the edge and leapt down the other side.
Dad, are you... Are we...
Shh, baby. We'll be okay.
He dragged himself over to his daughter, his mind and body feeling as if they had been through a meat grinder.
We'll be okay.
Langford stroked Kim's singed hair with a blistered hand. Tears formed in his burnt eyes. He didn't mind death himself, but to see Kim like this, her face bright red and bubbling, that she would have to suffer and die this way. Kim's lips began to swell, her eyelids puffing out. He felt a wave of bile churn up from the depths of his stomach and turned quickly away. Jesus, they must have absorbed a lot even just in that 1 second. And things had been going so damn well, but for one stinking red spy. So many good people dead. The newly formed government destroyed. And Kim, she wasn't making any sounds now. Her chest was hardly rising.
No, don't let go.
He lifted her head onto his lap.
Water. We need water.
He gently lifted her, careful to avoid scraping her skin, which looked as if it might just peel off. The president carried his daughter down the hill, moving very slowly so as not to lose his balance. It seemed an eternity, but somehow they made it to the bottom and a stream. Somehow it seemed that the water would help her. Pure, clean, bubbling up from the earth, it would heal her. His mind was growing foggy, confused. He took little handfuls of the cold, clear liquid and dripped it into her lips. The droplets bounced off her puffed lips. She didn't move. President Langford looked up with a startled glance and turned toward the sound. Could the Reds be sending in tanks to finish them off? Or worse, to capture them? He strained his eyes as the sound grew louder.
Good God.
Three immense vehicles in the shape of the sailing ships of centuries earlier, crackling with a throbbing blue electricity, came rushing from the brown and pink radioactive dust storm. Each craft was nearly 100 feet long, with sloping sides and a bow, and riding atop these incredible ships were mutations of a kind Langford had never before seen. Their organs all throbbing on the outsides of their bodies, and their flesh glowing with the same almost blinding blue energy that surrounded the ships.
Glowers.
Beneath each of the ships was an immense metallic ball, a good 10 feet in diameter, which seemed to serve as some sort of gyro, keeping the big ships balanced. The ball rolled as the ships shot forward with a smooth, majestic grace. They seemed to be riding on some sort of cushion of air as dust shot up from underneath them and out the sides, leaving a trail of swirling sand behind. He saw the lead craft lean to the wind, and he looked up. There, above them, were gigantic membranous sails billowing forward, filled with the expanding wind cloud from the atomic explosion. He wanted to run from these monstrosities, but he had no strength left. He felt himself being lifted up by invisible forces, Kim's prone body beside him. They were set down on the deck of the pulsating craft and gently released. Two of the glowers came over to Langford, stopping about 10 feet away. He slowly pulled his dagger from his waist sheath. The president turned to the 7-foot mutations, barely able to look at their electric faces.
Do not be afraid. We will not harm you.
It was as if the voice was appearing in the center of his brain instead of through his ears. They had telepathy. The vehicle turned sharply and rejoined its sister ships, which had already started making long, wide circles, heading back in the direction they had come. A group of glowers on the bow seemed to shift their bodies, and the ship responded instantly, heading back into the still-rising maelstrom of high-rad dust created by the N-bombs. It picked up speed, the high, nearly invisible sails filling out, and the ship shot out onto an open prairie to the west in tight V formation. The two glowers near Langford didn't move, but stood looking straight at him. Their faces and bodies were hideous, so different from the human form, with the brains exposed and writhing, the muscles of the mouth and jaw all on the outside, and the huge, hypnotically pulsing eyes sitting outside the sockets, hanging by veins and tendrils that fed back inside.
Friendship, friendship, you will not harm me.
Stop!
We are sorry. We are not used to talking with humans, just each other. We must adjust.
Langford dropped his hands from his ears and looked at them. He tried to calm himself. He mustn't judge them by their surface. They seemed kind. He could feel it, feel the warmth emanate from the telepathic communication.
What?
He was finding it hard to speak, as his own lips were swelling now. He looked down at Kim, who lay stone still.
There is no need to talk. We can hear your thoughts. Just focus them at us.
My thoughts? You can hear my... Why have you taken us prisoners?
Not prisoner, friends. We are the people. You call us the glowers. You are both grievously wounded. You and Kim, from the gamma radiation. You will die, unless you cooperate with us. We can help you, perhaps save you. Do you understand?
Yes. This is confusing. Their thoughts are showing up in my head, and I have to differentiate theirs from mine.
Yes, that is correct. Differentiation. When you think, send it out. But when you listen, open your mind. Do not be afraid. We have come a long way to get you.
How do you know us? Our names? Why? Why?
We know many things. Things beyond your comprehension.
The glower was now joined by several others. They stood together, 5 of them, only inches apart, and their glows seemed to pulse in unison, growing brighter and then dimming every few seconds. The ship was now moving at a good 90 miles an hour, whipping over the desert terrain as startled rabbits and snakes raced out of the way. The immense sails were now full to capacity, stretching like a gossamer thread high on the towering mast. The ship they were in had taken the lead, with the sister ships just behind and long each side. There was no sensation of motion, just the cool wind in his face.
We have been following you, Langford, for a long time. We know your heart. You are a good man. We can read what is inside a man. That is our knowledge. We have watched for many years. Now we must act. There are times when to just observe isn't evil. We have made our choice. We will help you.
Help us? How? How can you help us? My daughter's almost dead. I'm almost dead. They killed us both.
Take faith, Langford. Nothing is set. Nothing is final. Not even death. We take you now to our place where we will try to absorb the radiation that has infected your bodies. We cannot touch you with our own physicality, but with our minds and our collective power. Rest, Langford, and be at peace, for we are with you. Reach out to your daughter with your mind and touch her. Give her strength. She is in great pain.
The glowers pulled back from him to attend to the sails on the ship. Langford thought as hard as he could into Kim's mind that he was there, that she would live. The gentle rocking of the desert sail ship and his own infinite weariness put him quickly to sleep, his hand reaching out to touch Kim's shoulder and the bubbled flesh covering it. The three energy craft tore on through the afternoon and into the night, never stopping, never wavering for a second. Orders were shot back and forth telepathically about adjusting the sails so as to catch the winds and the electromagnetic energies of the coming night. The sun disappeared suddenly as if swallowed, and night dropped a hazy black curtain over the skies above the unknown lands of the far west. The heavens lit up with streaks of vibrant purples and oranges and blues as the Aurora Borealis began its electric dance of kaleidoscopic colors. The glowers joined together at the bow of each craft and gazed skyward, melding with the energy, becoming part of it. As their own bodies became streaked with the rippling colors of the aurora. They merged, in harmony with the earth, with the sky, with one another. They took in the pure, undiluted forces of the universe, took them into their physicality and their hearts, and drew their sustenance from them. As the morning sun once again dragged itself from the infinite canyons of night, a sickly orange ball barely shining through the now pink-clouded sky, the great desert sail ships slowed to a mere 30 knots and then pulled up short, dropping their sails to the deck. Langford got to his feet, still sick to his stomach, his mouth filled with a liquidy blood as the radiation continued its virulent work. The ships were on their sides now, slowly tilting over to about a 60-degree angle. Below, other glowers were resting long beams of a nearly translucent material against the sides of the craft so they didn't roll completely over. The president could see a town in the dim morning light, a town unlike any he had ever encountered. They were on a barren plain that stretched as far as the eye could see, with not a cactus or living thing in sight. To the right of the ship were perfectly constructed domes, about 30 of them, laid out in concentric circles. Each was a good 30 feet in diameter, except for the central dome, which stood towering above them, a good 90 feet high. They were made of a smooth, plastic-looking material, seamless, nailless, with a reddish coloration, almost flesh-toned. Veins of blue covered them like a web, pulsing very dimly, as if alive, circulating energy constantly around the perfect geometric shapes. Glowers walked slowly among the constructions, entering and leaving through some sort of doorway that Langford couldn't make out. No one moved quickly, but rather each step seemed deliberate, as if they were feeling every movement and reflecting on it before moving again. Langford swore he could hear them sending thoughts to one another, a cacophony of emotion and information moving at the speed of light. But it was so dim and distant, like listening to a phone wire and hearing the conversations buzzing through. Two of the glowers walked over to him again, stopping about 8 feet away. They never came closer than that, apparently afraid that their radiation might damage their human guests.
Come, it is time. Can you carry Kim?
Yes, I think so.
Drink this. It gives strength.
One of the glowers placed a small gourd near him and backed off.
Hell, if I don't trust them now, I might as well forget it all anyway.
The liquid tasted sweet, fiery, like a liquor made of honey, and it instantly filled him with a supportive strength. He tried to lift Kim and discovered to his surprise that she felt light.
This way.
The glowers walked just ahead of him down a gangplank that led off the side of the desert ship. They walked directly to the main geodesic dome, which as the president got closer, he could see was pulsing itself. The very walls of the thing seemed to be breathing. The surface of the structure parted as he came up to it. And he walked in, his daughter unconscious in his arms.
We must begin the decontamination of your bodies immediately.
This new voice seemed even somehow stronger than the other he had heard, with a presence that made his heart and bones feel the telepathic words. In the center of the dome, which had no decorations, no furniture, just a complex geometric painting on the floor, sat a glower, throbbing brilliantly in a blue-green color. He sat cross-legged at the very center of the painting, where all the lines of the swirling mosaic of circles and pentagrams and symbols Langford had never even seen joined together. A soft white light illuminated the interior from the apex of the dome, from some sort of giant crystal that Langford could feel the heat of 90 feet below.
I am the turquoise spectrum, the healing spectrum. We are here to help you, to keep you in this life. You must help us, must listen to what we say. Must send your strongest energies out. There will be no second chance. Do you understand my thoughts?
Yes. Yes, I do.
Langford began to say, but then thought the words, directing them at the seated, pulsating creature before him. Already he was feeling less terrified of their appearance. They had a strange kind of beauty, if one didn't judge them or compare them to humans. But they did take getting used to. This one rippled with turquoise waves, while beneath the crackling surface, every one of its organs was a different color.
Place the girl here.
The turquoise spectrum pointed with a purple glowing finger at an octagonal shape about 10 feet in front of it. Langford put Kim carefully down on the strangely soft floor.
Now lie down next to her. Time is in flux now. There are many possibilities. Relax. Relax. Relax.
The words fell onto Langford like comforting fingers, stroking, soothing. He scarcely noticed the 20 other glowers who silently entered the dome and seated themselves around the edge of the floor drawing. The minds all joined, became one. Powerful mental switches were being thrown, gates of consciousness being opened one after another.
Do not fear. Do not fear. Fear is the destroyer. Love is the healer. We will help you.
Langford felt himself surrendering to the soothing words, and then, suddenly, there was a fear. A fear that rushed up from his deepest psyche. Mistrust, hate, suspicion, the darker emotions. They did not wish to cooperate.
No. Why? Why should I cooperate? Why do you help us?
Even as he spoke the words, blood from his rotting gums oozed from his mouth.
We help so that you will fit again into the plans for peace. Harmony. In this branch of the infinite, multidimensional, multi-time universe. You have a part that is not yet over in this time juncture. We know this from our studies. We help because that is the life path. Your death is not set in stone. But the balance is precarious.
Trust. I will try, but you are so foreign.
Touch our minds, Langford. We will open our being to you. Do not be afraid. You can see what is in our hearts.
He was suddenly thrust into the collective consciousness of the dome full of glowers. It was so powerful, too much to handle, like being thrust into a computer circuitry with a billion bits of information moving at once. But he could feel their truth, their honesty. There was no lying here. They didn't know how.
I will trust. I will trust you.
And let us begin.